The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Some people come to me and they say, well, I want to be an accountant or I want to be an entrepreneur, but Sam, I don't know what I have to give up. Which route should I go? I'm like, then we talk about pros and cons, which one matters and resonates. And I said, but you do realize, after they made the decision to be an accountant, I said, but that doesn't mean it's an infinite pathway that just goes into a vortex that doesn't allow you to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
5 years, 10 years from now.
Right.
But now you've got the skills of an accountant, which is so critical for to be an entrepreneur.
Right. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think, look, there's people that are just paralyzed in their own decision making. And it's unfortunate. But I mean, yeah, at some point you just got to jump and stop looking back and wondering what was this and what was that. And
yeah,
I mean, but you know, people lose their mind sometimes. You just gotta, you know, it's like, look, you go into a simple example is you walk into a restaurant, there's a huge menu on the wall and you stand there. And there are people I know that do this and they just can't decide what to have for lunch because they're afraid that if they pick this and they don't pick this and that was a better choice than this and that would have tasted better and I wouldn't have this experience, like they're never going to come back to the restaurant again.
Mitch, you know what I do? I actually look at the person. I say, how long have you worked here? They said, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. I said, what's your favorite thing on the menu? And they're like, oh, this. And I'm like, perfect. I'll have that.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, my name is Sam Thera, and I'm coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Used to be in the corporate world, and you know what? I escaped from it and left, and you know what? It's been an amazing ride. I'm a speaker, storyteller, entrepreneur, mentor, coach, problem solver, educator, and a community activator. But all of this resounds around the whole idea of supporting individuals, teams, organizations, and nonprofits to be the best that they can be.
All right, Sam. So thanks so much for coming on my show. I know from what you told me, you're an avid podcast guester. I guest on a lot of podcasts too. I think it's a very good way nowadays to really get your message out because you reach a lot of people. Everybody's looking for good content, looking to connect with different audiences. So I appreciate taking the time out for me in the middle of your day in Vancouver. I almost got to British Columbia once and my father ended up having open heart surgery. We had to cancel it. It was my grandparents' 60th wedding anniversary trip. We were all going. Mm-hmm. And my mom was a travel agent at the time and she bought the trip insurance and it refunded the whole thing. And I never got there.
Hey, Mitch, but you know what? Things are slowly opening up. You've got an open invitation to Vancouver.
I have a friend up there, Robin Elliott. up in Vancouver. He said, don't come up here. We don't want you. You guys are all infected. And that was a while ago. So maybe he feels differently about it now. You can't come in. We're controlling everything up here. Don't come in. So,
hey, listen, Robin may have said that. I'm saying, you know what? Things are opening up slowly and we're all being cautious. You know what? Come on up and I'd be happy to host you up here.
Good. Probably the few places I would go that are outside the United States right now. You know, I wouldn't go to Europe. I don't think I would go on a cruise. Yeah, I would just.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. All right. So maybe we can talk about, you know, I know you're a motivations guy and I love all that stuff. It's what I like built my career on. I used to sit in my car, you know, with those tape sets, just driving around. But maybe we could talk about your background first, growing up with your parents and I don't know how they came here and how you got into the what you're doing, really. You were in the corporate world first, right?
No, totally. I mean, I was born in England, raised in Canada, came here when I was only 4 years old to Vancouver and established a life here. But my parents, they originally are from Fiji Islands, which is near Australia, New Zealand. And my grandfather's come from India. So it's like we've got this
all over the map.
Global aspect to it. And growing up in Vancouver, you know, you want to fit in, you want to be Canadian, you're a visible minority, but you know what? You become Canadian, you play road hockey, you eat hot dogs, you go to school, you just be, you know, just what you are. But equally at the same time, I found that my pathway was no different than so many people. You know, you finish high school, maybe you go to post-secondary.
Right.
The idea is graduate post-secondary, you get that corporate job and you know what? I've now established myself. And
a lot of us didn't really know any better, right? We were just taught by our parents who were working people. My grandparents came from Europe and that's all I was taught. You know, you go to college and you get a job and, you know, there wasn't this, you couldn't even major in entrepreneurship in those days.
Oh yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. Like they were like entrepreneurship. What is that? And
that's a French word, right?
Yeah. Well, can you spell it?
Yeah.
You know, and I just went into that corporate route, but I mean, it was a really bumpy ride. It's almost like watching a you know, clumsy goose trying to fly. You know, they flap their wings. They may elevate a little bit. They plop back down.
That's a good analogy, right?
Yeah. And that's what my life was. I mean, I graduated with a degree in business and political science. And Mitch, it was more like, you know, that's a great combination. Who's lucky to get me? And I started applying for jobs.
Right.
And, you know, back then it was letters and not emails and searches. And I got these letters. And what I do is I always hold on to them. 86 rejections.
Oh, you kept them all?
Oh, I did. I kept them all.
Oh, that's great.
86 rejection letters from companies.
Yeah, they didn't want you as much as you thought they would want you. That's usually what happens, right?
Hey, it switched from who's lucky to get me to who am I lucky to get a job?
Right. Am I lucky to get somewhere?
And then I did get my first job. And my first job was actually an entry-level government. Think business and political science. But
Make sense. Right. Sure.
No. It was a janitor in a hospital mopping floors and emptying rubbish bins because that was government work.
There you go. And that's perfect. You have your degree and now you're mopping floors. Well, we'll learn the hard way. Now, you were still up in British Columbia at this point, up in Vancouver.
Always.
You went to school there.
Yep.
Born and raised and bred locally.
Okay. Totally. Yeah. No.
Short stint in England. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you think of it, I mean, hey, I was cleaning up in business. I mean, but in a different way.
There you go. They taught you how to clean up really early on.
But you know what I learned, Mitch, was three valuable life lessons. And that actually still carries me to who I am today. The first lesson, my father said, I don't care what you do the best job possible. And you know what? At the end of my shift, there was no floor cleaner. There was no rubbish bin left full because he said, you just make sure you put your heart and soul into
good work ethic. Right. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that's still today.
Right.
And the second lesson was I would get on the elevator with nurses, doctors, administrators, and be ignored. Not every time, but there were times I would be ignored.
Because you're the janitor and they're the higher up medical people,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know what this feels like. I never treat anybody like this.
I feel the same way. Yeah. You don't, you know, and I had a conversation with my son recently, something about he was in an internship and how he's being treated and whatever. And he says, boy, you know, the guy wasn't very nice to me. I go, someday when you are in a higher position and you get out of college, you remember that.
Yep.
And there, somebody's picking up your garbage, you're cleaning your office or whatever, you treat them as a human being, just like you are. You're no different than they are. They just had a different journey and a path than you did.
Totally. And you don't even know the person's background.
Right.
I mean, I had physicists that were janitors. They just finished. They just were like, I'm tired of this. And they want to be a physicist or, you know, be a janitor.
Yeah. I also knew people that were physicists from like Eastern Bloc countries and they came here and they couldn't be a physicist here, you know? They were totally smart people, but they just, you know, they were making a way for their life for their family, really.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and that third valuable lesson was in anything that we do, mm-hmm. pull it back and see what's lessons that you can learn that carries you forward. And I learned that in any experience, there are lessons, whether it's being an entrepreneur, whether being an individual,
sure.
there's lessons. And as I went forward, then I finally did get a corporate job. It was in government, you're doing really well, but I realized it just didn't fit me. And no. I was there for a number of years, and it was just more like, you know, they offered a buyout to all the employees. They needed 850 people to leave out of 6,000.
And so like an early severance package type of thing?
Totally. Totally. And I looked at it and I thought, huh. And there were two words, comfort and uncertainty.
Yeah.
Comfort is what we strive towards, but comfort is when we stop growing.
Right.
And uncertainty means staying. You can move me where you want, and I have no control over that. Or leaving. Uncertainty, I don't have a job. And I wound up taking the severance package and taking the leap. And then, you know, Mitch, I wound up working on the Olympic bid to get the games to Vancouver and worked on one of the most amazing projects
nice.
that we held here in Vancouver in 2010. And I was part of that team that got it there. And then eventually I just said, you know what, I have to get back to the university and I have to get back to help young people maneuver in life and career. I have to help entrepreneurs vision mm-hmm. their business. And you know what? It's been 17 years at the university and I'm never tired of it. Everybody that comes, you know, we have about 3 to 8 conversations a week just to help people in life and career. But what I really realized, and this is where that transition happened, the signature piece, we're always so focused on what. In other words, we define ourselves by what we do. But the moment I flipped it to who I am,
yeah,
everything changed. And I really now teach my classes in organizational behavior on who are you? Let's figure out who you are.
Right. I think a lot of us go through life, and I'm just as guilty of it as anybody else, not really looking at, you know, what it is who we are, what makes us feel good about what we do. And we just kind of do the things that we're told to do. I also think you had made a comment about comfort. I think comfort it's an illusion.
Yeah.
So people are comfortable and they're afraid to change yeah. things and try things because they're afraid it's not going to work. But then they get laid off. Mm-hmm. They weren't so comfortable. Now the company doesn't need them anymore. And they didn't, and it's too late. You know, they're 55, 60 years old, and it's not that they can't do it, but it's much yeah. harder. Yeah. They're not going to take a new job because nobody will pay them enough. Right.
Yeah.
And it becomes, they become accidental entrepreneurs. That's where the title
comes from. Totally.
And yeah. And I think people have to reconcile that they're not as safe and comfortable and protected as they think they are having a quote unquote job. I'm not saying it's for everybody to go out and be an entrepreneur,
totally.
But yeah. you know, you got to call a spade, so to speak.
No. And the whole idea behind it is I agree with exactly with what you're saying. Certainty is, again, it's just imaginary. I mean, we think yeah. it's certain. But it's
certain until it changes, right?
Totally. I mean, and yeah. COVID has turned us totally upside down.
Oh, people are reevaluating their whole lives.
Yeah, no, yeah. totally. And this is where, you know, have you done, you know, it's almost like when I took that leap of faith from that corporate job, I didn't just do it blindly. No, I had a parachute, and that parachute were the experiences I gained and the people around me that I had built these relationships with. They weren't going to let me fall.
Right.
And period of time. It just, you know, now you just maneuver. But the moment I flipped it to who I am, everything started to become more clear.
So what was that metamorphosis? Like who did you yeah. think you were and who were you yeah. now?
Well, and that's the part, because everything prior to that was what? And then I said, what are the things that are going to guide and direct me in life? Mm-hmm. And where this might lead me. And it made me realize that oftentimes we're putting that cart before the horse, our job is, and we're going in a particular direction. And oftentimes it's by default.
Yeah.
But when I sat down and I started thinking about it, you know, and I asked myself, what am I not willing to compromise as I move forward to a new life and a new career? And I came up with 5 key areas. Back then it was leadership, story sharing, corporate community relations, student development, and community do-gooder. And then what I realized is I matured more, shifted and flipped in different positions. And I've even changed those titles because leadership was too broad. So I said, okay, but what do I mean by leadership? And it's servant leadership. So now it's servant leadership, story sharing, activator, igniter, champion enabler, and community do-gooder. Student development was too narrow because I help organizations, teams, right. people. So I made it broader and wider. And, you know, so you tweak it. And the idea is, by having this foundation of five things that I'm not willing to compromise,
right.
I now can balance it against any opportunities that come in life and career to say whether this is something I should do. I mean, being a writer was never a goal of mine. But then all of a sudden, when writing emerged about 7 years ago, after I did my first TEDx speech, all of a sudden it was like people said, you know, you should write a book about it. And I didn't even know how to write a book, but you teach yourself and you learn. But it hit 5 out of 5. I needed to do this because it told me that this is something you have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I interviewed a gentleman who's a neuroscientist, and he wrote a book about never go with your gut. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, against the blink mentality of, you know, well, I mean, if you make decisions like this versus thinking about them, they're usually no better. And the problem is with that, it's actually, and I love Malcolm Gladwell. I love his stuff. Yep. I love his podcast, his history podcast and everything. But, you know, his data is flawed because what he's doing is he's comparing making a decision in a blink and taking time without a proper process to make a decision. Well, of course, they're going to be about the same. But if you have a value-based system where you're making a decision and evaluating things on a consistent basis, then you will have better results because you're treating it the same and you're saying, okay, well, this is I know my process. So I'm not going to go with emotion and say, oh, this is terrible or this is wonderful. I'm so excited. Let's go. Next thing you know, you're like, what did I do? You take it, you apply it to your process, you evaluate it. Does this hit three of my five bells, five of my five, whatever. And then you can be more confident with the decisions you make. And I think we all, maybe you earlier on didn't, we all miss that. Like we all just do things on emotion. It's so fun to like get charged. Like, look, like you said, you motivate people and that's one of the things that you do. And I love it. And I love to hear people speak and listen. And I'm I listen to all this stuff. I get charged up, but sometimes you let your emotions take you away, you know, and you kind of have to have a process to go back and say, okay, I'm all excited, but does this meet my, like in your case, my five criteria?
Yeah.
And I think people can really learn from that.
No, approach. And one of the things I think that's really important is the balance of this, because on the one hand, the emotions, if you just did it just because out of emotions, I mean, yeah, that could be very dangerous. Equally, what I've seen.
Well, that's why we are bad decision makers, because we're emotional beings for the most part. Yeah.
And then the other part of it is, the other spectrum is people who sit on it because until they're 100% sure that they want to put their footing down to make sure, can I touch the ground? Then I'm going to take this leap. I think there's this point in between where you have to remove that emotional side. And at the same time, at a certain point in time, you have to say, okay, I've evaluated. I need to now act upon it and actually action it.
Right.
The flip side is people who don't even action it. They talk about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have a process, you got to be willing to then move forward. Now, look, if you're not happy and excited about what it is and you evaluate it and meet your criteria, you may still abandon it and not do whatever the decision is you make. But if you're excited about it, and it meets your criteria, makes you feel good, that should be the end of the process.
Totally.
You should have faith in the process that is working for you to make your decision. Because if not, you're right. You're just going to be paralyzed for the rest of your life. And, you know, always wondering, you know, should I put my foot on the ground? Should I take my shoe off? Should I do that? And some people live like that. You know them. They're they might as well stay in their house. They're afraid to go outside. It's not a good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Took my abnormal
Mitch,
sight.
Mitch, I've had people who are standing at the fork of the road, and then they're like, do I take the step or that step? They want me to make the decision for them,
right?
Which I don't.
No, you can't.
I can't, number one. Right. And number two, this is not like an Indiana Jones movie where you step on the wrong stone and you fall to your death.
Right.
But that's what they're afraid of. And
I know. Life is not really like that.
No.
And with rare exception, yeah.
true. And the other part that they don't realize is once they take that first step, what they do is they turn around and they walk backwards, looking at the point they left, questioning whether I made the right decision or not.
Right.
And they don't realize that that pathway they're on actually bends and curves and intersects the place they just gave up.
Yeah.
You know, some people come to me and they say, well, I want to be an accountant or I want to be an entrepreneur, but Sam, I don't know what I have to give up. Which route should I go? I'm like, then we talk about pros and cons, which one matters and resonates. And I said, but you do realize after they made the decision to be an accountant, I said, but that doesn't mean it's an infinite pathway that just goes into a vortex that doesn't allow you to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
5 years, 10 years from now.
Right.
But now you've got the skills of an accountant, which is so critical for to be an entrepreneur.
Right. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think, look, there's people that are just paralyzed in their own yep. decision making. And it's unfortunate. But I mean, yeah, at some point you just got to jump and stop yep. looking back and wondering what was this and what was that. And
yeah,
I mean, but you know, people lose their mind sometimes. You just gotta, you know, it's like, yeah. look, you go into a simple example is you walk into a restaurant, there's a huge menu on the wall and you stand there. And there are people I know that do this yeah. and they just can't decide what to have for lunch because they're afraid that if they pick this and they don't pick this and that was a better choice than this and that would have tasted better and I wouldn't have this experience. Like they're never going to come back to the restaurant again.
Mitch, you know what I do? I actually look at the person. I say, how long have you worked here? They said, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. I said, what's your favorite thing on the menu? And they're like, oh, this. And I'm like, perfect. I'll have that.
See, you just demonstrated my point. You have a process.
I do.
That deals with that type of overwhelmingness because it is life is of an overwhelming menu, right? So you yep. have a process. You go into a restaurant and say, I don't need to be bothered with this.
Yep.
And you ask the expert and the guy yep. says, now, hopefully you're not asking a kid who just started the other day, but you know, you okay. ask him how long he's been there. I don't know what it would say if I just started today. Maybe be like, well, do you know anybody who's been here for a while? Right. Mm-hmm. And then you'd order.
No.
And if you didn't like it, you know, so what? It's fine.
I learned this is what I don't like, but yeah, exactly. equally at the same time, when it comes to life and career, that's what I don't do. I don't impose and say, well, then, you know, you got to do this.
Right.
Again, it's an in-between thing. The meal thing, that's easy when you're overwhelmed. But I think the most important thing is don't just ask people,
right.
you know, what should I do? Because they will tell you based on their views based on their journey.
Some people are very willing to tell you, maybe too willing. They impose their opinions. They're very opinionated. And the people that aren't so, what's the word? So strong willed will get pushed in different directions. And maybe the person doesn't really mean this, but they're so strong willed that the other person is getting pushed in this direction. And those are the people that just kind of get pushed down the road in life, you know?
Oh, totally. And I mean, what I've seen is, you know, even on the in that whole aspect of it is I've had people come to me and they're like, you know, Sam, you know, I was thinking of being a writer, but I'm not going to do that anymore. And I said, oh, but this is something you've talked about since high school. What happened? And they're like, yeah, I can't make money at this. And I'm like, okay, who said you can't make money at this?
Right.
And they said, well, so-and-so. And I said, okay, I've got some questions for you. Number one. This person who said you can't make money at this, do they have anything to do with the writing industry? And they're like, no. And I said, okay, so what gives them the credibility?
Right.
And then she was like, oh. And then I said, okay, I'm a writer, but even don't even need to talk to me. Let me put you in touch with people in the writing industry, publishers, editors. And then I also said, but when you talk about the writing industry, are you talking about, you know, are you talking about fiction writing, nonfiction writing, publishing, editing? Are you talking about corporate communications? And, you know, I went down a list. She was like, oh, my gosh, I didn't realize how big it was. I define myself as a difficult monk because people come to me looking for the answers to life. Now, I got a gray beard, but equally, I don't
have
an orange.
Doesn't mean you have the answers to life, yeah.
No, and I'm not on an orange saffron robe. I live near a mountain, but I'm not on the mountain. But people come to me asking me, what should I do? And I'm a difficult monk because my job is not to tell you what to do.
Right.
My job is to be difficult and ask you questions because the monk that they seek lies within them. And through conversation and reflection and introspection, they start deciding, oh, okay, now, and they walk away with more clarity. But yeah, so I try to be that difficult monk.
Well, I think people look outside themselves for answers that they think exist out there. People think life has some secret meaning, like there's some secret to life. That's not true. There's things that people figure out for themselves, for the path that they're on, for the experiences that they have, and they've gotten to wherever they are to be successful. And maybe they're really not happy. I don't know, but they appear to be successful, right? Yeah. People don't understand that life has meaning because you give it meaning through language and experience and things like that. There's no inherent meaning of life, or somebody would have discovered it and said, this is the meaning of life, and we would all be following it. We'd be happy, you know, whatever. The life would be good. There'd be no more war. There's no disagreements. Yep. But it doesn't exist. It's not true. Yeah. So, you know, and people are, I've had conversations with people. They're like, well, what do you mean? You don't believe in God? I go, what does God have to do with that? There's, you know, you could have religious beliefs or whatever, but all those beliefs create, you know, have meaning and so forth because you take them to heart, because you believe them, because you follow them, because you use those values in your life, not because there's some inherent thing out in the world that does that, or else none of these bad things would exist.
Yeah. It's not, there's no checklist. There's no checklist.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You got to make your own checklist. You got to make your own processes. You got to make your own approach. And a lot of people spend their life not doing it. But I think the message that you send is, and the insurmountable task that you've taken on in your life to affect people and affect people change is, you know, it's a lot to be said for, you know, giver's gain. You always want to be on the long end of the giving stick, I say.
Yeah.
Your giving stick is very long. So,
Well, it's been about 5,000 conversations to date. And I will tell you, I am surrounded by greatness. And I've never done it for anything else except the need to support and help people in their journey. But these people have gone on to do amazing things in life. And it goes back to Sir Isaac Newton, who said, I've only been able to see far because I stood on the shoulders of giants. And that's what my life is. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants because these people have gone on to do fabulous things in life and career. And my role and responsibility was not to tell them what to do, but I sit with this satisfaction. It's like in the Winter Olympics, I'll give an example.
Okay.
Gold medal ice hockey game. And, you know, when let's say Team Canada wins the gold medal, the players storm off the bench and they're given that gold medal. But in the Olympic Games, the coach doesn't get a gold medal. But what they have is their arms folded, and they've got this satisfaction, this grin on their face going like, man, yeah, this was an amazing ride. That's what my life is. Like, you know, I have that satisfaction. And, you know, I just found out yesterday that this one person I was really striving towards to help, she comes from a very difficult background in Nepal. It's a 6-day trek to her school, difficult trek. She's got a scholarship to a school in Vancouver Island. We've been working so hard because that high school is now finished to get her into our university. And I've worked, there's so many of us that have worked so tirelessly. But yesterday she sent me a note saying, I just got the full ride scholarship. And oh my gosh, like I was on a Zoom call and all of a sudden people are like, why are you smiling? I'm like, I can't tell you right now. But, and you know, just the amazing sense that I'm going to be on this person's journey. I'm going to open up my house to her so she can come and stay with us when she needs family time and stuff like that. Where she goes in life, it's going to be amazing to see where she's going to go in life. And I'm just glad I get to be a part of this and a spectator.
So do you teach at the university and you're working with adults and business owners and entrepreneurs outside of the university environment?
Totally. I mean, many of them are people that I've mentored and coached while they were students, and they've gone 10, 15 years into industry now. And they're like, yeah, can we have this conversation? And I always say that there's this, I wrote a blog post. It was called Had to Do, Have to Do, Want to Do. The first job out of university, pay, benefits, culture, none of this is going to matter. You need a job. And this is what I had to do. And then 5 or 10 years later, Mitch, I'm getting a phone call or an email from someone saying, Sam, you know what? It's great. You know, I just saw your name pop up. We haven't caught up in ages. Can we grab something? Like, let's go grab a beverage and sit down and talk. And I'm like, perfect. But when we sit down and talk, it guides us to have to do. Because they're like, I've been in this job for so many years. Eventually the conversation is, Sam, I want to move to this want to do, but I'm not sure what I should do. So it's even in that realm as well.
Yeah.
It's the had to do, have to do, want to do.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
So what do you see in terms of the things that you're helping people with the... Mm-hmm. This is kind of a like a loaded advice question and the things that you see that people are struggling with.
Yep.
And you know, how you're helping them get over it, what people should think about.
Yeah, I've said that, and we've talked a bit about this, is the noise around is too deafening. How do we activate the voice within? And how do we flip the switch from what to who? In other words, instead of defining, and this is what I do in my class, I teach organizational behavior.
Okay.
So in week 2 and in week 11, I make them write a personal statement. It's one of the toughest exercises they've had to do. I don't want a running resume of I'm this, 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 this. No, no. So it would be Mitch is someone who, and then tell me something interesting about you in a conversation type of way. And it opens their eyes to this part, because after they finish my class, they're like, can we still keep in touch? And it's like, but they're working on their personal statement, which nobody's ever told them to do. No one ever told me that this is what I should do. So I incorporate into my class in organizational behavior a lot of these lessons and life experiences, career tips, and they walk away with a lot. And it goes back to what you said earlier is I want you 5 to 10 years later, not to remember what mark you got in my class,
right,
but to then remember a concept and say, ah, now I know what he meant by this.
Yeah.
And how that's going to help you.
Right. Yeah. 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 So what do you think, what are the things that you see people struggling with in your, let's start with students first.
Okay. So with students,
I consider them different, like adults. They're, well, they haven't been out in the real world yet. So
they haven't. Very heavy in theory, very light in practice, and make it fit.
That's a good comment. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And what I see them, they struggle with is, perspectives and perceptions of what it's like out there.
Right.
And, you know, the reality is it's different than when you actually get out there. The other thing I find is that, you know, a lot of the world is painted through social media. In other words, what's
nowadays,
trending, what's not. And, you know, it's about, okay, let's put the device down for a while. And the art of conversation. Let's have a conversation. I have a lot of people struggling who say, look, I have to go to this event. How do I get into a conversation?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I just talk to people.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have those issues in those days. We didn't have all this stuff.
Yeah. No. And if you think of it, the devices that we have, like our smartphones, are supposed to improve or increase our level of communication. And it does, but it also distances us because so much easier to send an emoji or do something like that.
Yep.
So I find that's one of the struggles they have is not having this grasp of what it's like out there. And equally, how do I connect with people that are already in industry who are maybe Gen X's or even those baby boomers who are slowly exiting out? So it's about helping them maneuver and learn about how do you apply, and the key word is apply,
right,
what we're doing now into the real world. Like, it's all about the application. I'm not so heavy into the theory side. I'll talk about the theory and what the theory means, but how does it relate? And I share with them this concept of myth, theory, and practice. Myth, right, is what you believe and what I believe the world to be. Theory is a logical explanation, but has it been proven? So now we take the theory and we apply it in practice, and now we see if it works or not. So that's that audience, is really trying to open their experiences, their eyes to, you know, the art of conversations, to start building those formidable relationships with people in industry and helping them realize how to build those relationships that are going to benefit them as they move forward.
Right. I think for a lot of college kids, especially, it's more daunting than they think. It's more daunting than it really is. Like, you get out, yeah, in the real world, it's not as hard as it was in college. And it's, you know, you start talking to people and it's not as bad, you know, they don't bite your head off. People don't throw tomatoes at you when you talk to them. It's not, but you know, look, what's the saying? People would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy.
Oh, totally. I mean,
people do not like public speaking, or even in small groups, you know? So,
well, and Mitch, one tip I give people.
Skill. Yeah.
Yeah. And I give this to students, but also professionals, is why are you making this even more complicated and difficult? If you and I meet at the first, you know, time and we're at an event, or I come to your house for dinner and you open the door, is the first question you ask me, Sam, can you tell me what the trends are from university to first corporate level jobs? What are some of the success rates or things that you've seen? Is that the first question? Of course
right.
not. Or, of course at not. Least I hope that's not going to be the first question, Mitch. The first question is going to be like, Sam, how are you doing? Like, how was your flight to New Jersey? And, you know, oh, yeah, it was like this. My luggage got lost. Oh, yeah, I know what this. I always say, ask the first question and then listen and observe. Listen to what they say and build on that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't think past the next question. It'll happen naturally.
Totally.
It progresses. Yeah. Well, I think people overthink things a lot. Yeah. So what about the adults that you deal with and you coach and you mentor?
Yeah. I mean, for them, I think a lot of the struggles they have is that, you know, they've had this idea, perspective, and thoughts of what the corporate world was going to be like. And now all of a sudden it's shifted and changed. And how do I now find this new realm? The way I describe it is, if you and I both had to go buy a suit, or let's say university students, everybody goes to buy a suit, and we walk into a store and they have lots of suits, but the only suit is a 52 short. Now, I'm a 42 regular.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
That's
so
a
my
problem.
Sleeves, I know. Well, the sleeves will come up to here. Trousers will be up to calf length, and I could use it as a double-breasted.
Yeah.
Now, you and I could wear the suit, and that's what our careers are like, is I can wear it, but just doesn't really fit. I want to help them create a tailored suit. So let's sit down and say, okay, what have you done up to this point? And helping them. And the thing I find that people don't do is either journal or reflect. They do it. They do the job, but they don't take the time. Like, when people go to an interview and someone says, so tell me about a time when you worked in a difficult situation with a client. And then people are like, oh, they look to the ceiling because that's where the answer is. And then you pull maybe not the best example. So take the time. And that's one thing I find is they don't reflect. What is it that you don't like about your present position? Or maybe it's your manager.
Right.
Learn about it. So, and then that helps you to build your abilities to then move forward and find something that's more suitable. And that's where the five core elements piece that I talked about earlier helps you to recognize and say, okay, I'm going to balance it against this and say, okay, this is important to me. How do I move forward?
Now, where are a lot of these people coming from? Are they in industry, they're in corporations, and they're now going out on their own into their own businesses? Any particular industry, or what kind of things are they doing from corporate to,
Some of them are just moving from one corporate position to another corporate position. Some of them are doing that. They're looking for the next step or the next thing to be doing. A number of them, much like you said, are looking to, you know, become entrepreneurs. And some of them are sideline entrepreneurs, as I call them. Like, in other words, I have my corporate job, but equally at the same time on evenings and weekends, I'm going to work on this project and see if I can make this happen or make
it's a side gig for them. So they can
totally. And And the odd person actually says, nope, I'm taking a leap of faith and I'm going to do this.
Right.
And that's where, you know, you're there to support and help and, you know, give them ideas about possible opportunities and, you know, putting them in touch with maybe things that they weren't aware of as resources to help them vision where this business should go.
I always thought that a lot of corporate people, and I'm probably wrong, but go into like consultancies, meaning if they go out on their own, they become a consultant to the industry that they know. Yeah. There's a good friend of mine, well, she's a good friend of mine now. Her name's Erin Halper. She runs a website. A lot of it is more for women, just ironically, it wasn't intended that way. Yeah. But there are people that left corporate America. It's called The Upside. I think the website's called Be The Upside, but it's a digital online community of people that are going to consultancies and want to run a consulting practice from corporate America. And they share resources and they, you know, do all kinds of stuff. And because most of these people, a lot of them didn't know it was possible or they left their job, maybe especially that's why it's a lot of women, right? They have children and then they're like, well, shit, I'm not going back to that. And that's what happened with COVID right now. There's a lot of executives, men and women. Yeah. They're like, well, you got to come back to work. They're like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 57 years old. I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of movement. Yeah.
Well, no. And that's where, you know, you look at individuals who just basically are like, okay, but what else is there? What is this? And, you know, I came up with an acronym for how we're slowly emerging while we're in COVID, but emerging to support people. And I said, there is a need for us to care right now. And care, which applies to being entrepreneurial as well, is collaboration, adaptability, resilience, and empathy. Those are four critical words from even a company, individual, but as an entrepreneur, I mean, we have to collaborate. I mean, you're not in a vacuum and by yourself.
Yeah.
Who are the people that you can share? And, you know, I've got this person in Zimbabwe who just said, you know, I spoke in Zimbabwe back in 2018 and we're still in touch. And she said,
wow.
Maybe I need to get you as, you know, come in as a consultant and, you know, help us with our business idea. So collaboration means reach out to people, whether it's you reaching out or someone's reaching out to you, but there's more power to us if we collaborate.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big advocate of using mentors, advisory boards for your small business, because when you're in a corporation, that's the natural path of things. When you're on your business, you're like on an island. And you don't think to seek out advice on a regular basis. I mean, a systematic regular basis, quarterly meetings, even on Zoom, whatever, to get people's input and support for your business. And it's invaluable. A lot of people don't do that. They don't collaborate.
No.
They think, well, I'm a solopreneur. Who am I going to collaborate with? My competitor?
Yeah.
Like, no, it doesn't work that way. People who work together do more.
Totally.
You know, I got people in the same industry that collaborate.
Yeah. And you may see them as competitor, but actually you may be realizing that they're actually a collaborator, not a competitor.
Yeah.
And then the second word is adaptability, in the sense that we need to look at what we do and how we do it. And how do we pivot, shift, and change? And I've, in the businesses I've had, I mean, that's what we've done. And it's led to some great ideas and at the same time helped me to realize, yeah, this isn't going to work.
Right.
Resilience is this whole idea of building, sustainability into your life and into your business.
Yeah.
It's a marathon, regardless of what you're doing.
Life is a big marathon.
Totally.
If it's a sprint, you're going to peter out. You're going to give up. You're going to go back, get a job, whatever it happens to be.
And then the last word is empathy. I think we need to show more care and compassion to each other. And the benefit is when you show care and compassion, empathy, that's where the relationships emerge from, because all of a sudden the guards come down going like, man, I needed this conversation today. Or, you know what, there's much more I'd like to talk to you about. And, you know, now all of a sudden, all of that just comes together. So collaboration, adaptability, resilience, and empathy are four things that will help entrepreneurs and help individuals.
Yeah, well, I could say certainly from a resilience standpoint, that was very important during the pandemic. The people that were resilient, the people that shifted their business. I used to say pivot, but somebody criticized me and said, don't use the word pivot, because if you keep pivoting, you're going to end up back where you started. I go, okay.
Yeah.
So, but the people that shifted what they were doing, they started doing things to help the community, to care for others. And then the empathy, I find that people that are empathetic tend to react differently when faced with adverse situations, especially with other people, right? If you're empathetic, you tend to look at what's going on and say, well, that person's not being nice, or they're trying to hurt me or whatever. Maybe they had a bad day. Maybe they found out one of their children is sick. Maybe they lost a loved one. Maybe they're constipated. I don't know what it is, but the people that are non-empathetic tend to look at themselves.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing to me? Why are you doing this to me? I don't deserve this. Yeah. And it leads to controversy and conflict and misunderstanding. So empathy is definitely a learned skill that everyone should. But I like acronyms. I'm big on because it helps you remember things. Yeah.
And that's an easy one, too.
Yeah, that is a very easy one. We'll have to put that in the show notes so we spell it out for people. People that are driving, they can't remember.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So tell me what you have going on. I know you're a big podcast guester, so you're on. So, but what else you have coming up? What university do you work at?
At Simon Fraser University, and the BD School of Business is where I teach.
So are you guys opening in the fall full, you know, back to regular schedule?
But we've been on regular schedule. We flipped and like we said, being adaptable, we went online and, it was an easy transition. But yeah, we're going in the classroom in the fall. I've got two classes already scheduled.
So the kids are coming back in the fall.
Yep.
And what other things you got coming on? You got any TEDx? First of all, your TEDx talks are online. People can find them.
Yep. There's two TEDxes. One's on personal storytelling, and the other one is about activating the voice within to be louder than the noise around.
Great stuff.
And then I've just recently launched four very short videos on just these motivational quick things on, you know, this concept of care that I shared, or the journey I took to India to find my ancestral roots and own identity.
Yeah.
So it's these short videos. But, you know, my life is surrounded by the teaching is something I greatly enjoy. The marking I don't, but the teaching I enjoy. Because you get to interact and engage with these individuals. And so the teaching is ongoing. Writing, I mean, I've got about 170 blog posts so far. It's my way of thinking about life experiences. And then writing another book at the same time on leadership.
Working on a book?
Yep, another book. Okay. At the same time, so like you say, podcast guest, there's been a numerous number there. And it's part of it is because I love
any thoughts of going and creating your own podcast?
Yes.
You got the books, you got the blogs, you got the material, right?
Yeah, no. And I'm in the process of creating a podcast, but it's really geared to the 15 to 40 year olds. And it's called Puzzling Thoughts to help them maneuver using all the experiences and tools and the people that I'm surrounded by that I've been able to work with and experts now. To help that. So podcast in the future in that category. And one thing I highly recommend everybody embrace is an outlet. For me, it's woodworking now. Like I could be out there.
Like a hobby, you mean?
Totally. But when it's an outlet or a hobby, what I find is it's unrelated to the five things that are important in my life, the five core elements. However, it's important because even prior to this call, I was working on three boards that somebody wants me to get ready for Monday. I'm sanding, and it's for 2 hours I was sanding, but thoughts and ideas come into your mind because you've now released all the commitments totally.
Sure.
And it really helps you to come up with things that will support the things that you're working on. And this could be, for me, it's woodworking, but it could be yoga, it could be cooking, it could be going out for walks. Just something that becomes your outlet that separates you from the everyday.
Yeah. I remember we lived in Columbus, Ohio for 2 years, and there was a gentleman across the street from me. He and his wife were big smokers. And I think he's since passed away pretty young, maybe early 60s. And he used to have he had doubled the size of his garage, and the back of the garage was a wood shop.
Yep.
He later got into glass blowing. I mean, the guy would build his house by hand. It was unbelievable. He was so talented. And he used to turn these gorgeous wood bowls. Mm-hmm. And I used to say to his name was Ron. I said, Ron, you should turn, because I'm a business guy. You should turn this into a business. He goes, Mitch, if I turn this into a business, then I start making wood and I start creating things for other people. I do this for myself. I don't have the pressure of feeling like, will they buy this? I don't want to do that. I want to turn out. And I mean, they were gorgeous stuff anyway, but I remember that when he said that once it goes from being a hobby, being an outlet to being something where you feel pressure to produce for other people, it changes the whole dynamic.
No. And I mean, some of the things I've made people have bought, but they've appreciated.
But that wasn't your intention. Yeah.
No. And that's the same with when I wrote my books. It was never about, okay, I'm writing this book so I can make lots of money. No.
Right.
the book about going to India to find my ancestral roots and my identity, I wrote it because it's a beautiful story that just needs to be shared.
More cathartic for you, right?
Totally. And it's become my magnum opus now. No matter how many books I write in the future, this one is my life's work.
Nice. Very nice. Well, I think it's a journey that I don't even know if I could go find my ancestral roots. I don't even know, like, a lot of it got lost in the Holocaust and things like that. I mean, I think part of my family's from Eastern Europe. You know, the funny thing is my grandmother, may she rest in peace, 101 and a half, took like a breath and died, you know, would always tell me, oh, that Beinhacker, we're not related to him. We're not related to him. Well, it turns out there's this woman that I know, Carrie Levinson, I think her name is. She found out that her great grandmother was my great grandfather's sister.
No kidding.
And that's why she's a Levinson through marriage. She was never a Beinhacker, but she has traced the entire family tree. So there are Beinhackers all over the world that spell it a little bit differently.
Yep.
But, you know, contrary to what my grandmother claimed was true, it's not true. We are all related.
Yeah.
And there's one guy in that one town over from here spells it differently. His name is Kevin Beinhacker. I've never met him my entire life. We connected through Facebook. Maybe I'll meet him someday now that we're coming out of lockdown. But, you know, it's funny because you lose that in the world. And now with all the social media stuff, like you said, it's too much for the kids. They should be disconnected, whatever. But there are good sides of it, right? You connect with people that you never would have. I wouldn't have found out I got relatives in Uruguay.
Yeah.
Paolo Beinhacker is his birthday, you know, whatever. So,
No, but I mean, the whole idea behind it is going on a search, and I thrive in ambiguity and uncertainty. Like, I love that space. Yeah. And I had very limited information.
Most people don't, by the way.
No, Sam. They don't. No, I know I'm an anomaly. And, and people often say, Sam, you're crazy. Like, are you kidding me? All I had, Mitch, was a faded photograph and very little information to find my grandfather.
But that drives you, right? I mean, that motivates you. That gets you excited. So did you do? I don't want to get too much into the book because people can read it, but what did you do? You just got in a plane. You had this like an address and a photograph and you started out?
No address. All I had was this photograph on the back.
Yeah. I see.
And so it's a faded photograph. And
you have a town?
So they said the name of the village is Chadobi. Okay. It sits about 5-6 miles from this town called Garshankar in the district of Hoshiarpur. But here's the problem. Everybody that I talked to that was from the district of Hoshiarpur knows Garshankar. They said, never heard of that village. I think the name is mistaken or it's changed or what.
Really?
Really. So you just sort of have very limited information. And the journey was not just to find the village, but it also made me realize about my own identity. And the way that the journey goes, this is the part that's the beautiful part, is the actual journey to go search for your ancestral roots is the most important part. And there was a thin thread that just connected me back to this village, and that was it. And what I found with people is that they said, yeah, it's a beautiful story, but I don't even know where I could even start. And I said, but here's the thing. You don't even have to go to the exact house.
Right. It might not even exist anymore, right?
Oh, totally. But if you went to the community, there's this thing about all of a sudden a sense of, I belong here.
Yeah. And did you feel that way?
I did. And that was where it was like, all of a sudden, it was just more like, there's something familiar about this place. And even if, I mean, I don't want to give a spoiler alert or anything.
No, but you found the village. Was it properly named? Did you have the right name?
The name had shifted and changed a very little.
Okay.
But it sounded the same, but the spelling was off. But not only that, Mitch, I found my grandfather's house.
Wow.
And the people who are there are my grandfather's older brother's family.
That are living in the house?
That are living in the house. And this one lady saw this photograph. And like I said, it's the journey because it wasn't easy. And there were many setbacks. But she looked at this picture and she goes, that's me. Who are you? And it was just this, you know, some sort of an intervention that happened that helped us to find it. Because it literally was a needle in a haystack and not even really knowing
an
where
Alex
the haystack
Haley
was.
Moment.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So this was your your
paternal, my paternal
grandparents. Yeah. And then your grandfather then went to, what was it, Australia?
No, Fiji. So he
Fiji,
left.
Right. Okay.
In around 1905, he hopped on a steamer ship in Calcutta. And
this is your grandfather, right?
My grandfather.
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, and everything this is why it's important, Mitch. Everything is oral history now.
Right.
And people are passing on, people are forgetting things. And I write about that in my book about how we'd sit together and I'd ask my uncles and my father about what do you guys remember? And the conversations start moving, not to helping me, but they start reminiscing about their past and they start laughing. And they were like, man, this was fun. But my grandfather wound up in Fiji and we don't know exactly why. One of three reasons. He comes from a landlocked part of India. Maybe he had enough of sea travel. One. Number two, maybe the boat stopped in Fiji and he looked around going like, man, this is paradise. Maybe I'll get off here. The third thing, he was on his way to Argentina for cattle herding or ranching. Maybe he thought this was Argentina and got off the boat. We don't
know. It's possible, right?
No, it is.
You know? So then he met your grandmother there?
Yep. And then that's where family started.
And you said you were born in England for a very short period of time, and then they moved to Canada. Your family's been all over the world.
Yeah, it feels like it. But just the fact that I was able to go to my village, and I did this for my father because I write about it in my book, 9 years old. He became a paraplegic. He's still with us. And I wanted to do this for him, and I went with Ziploc bags. But this is where I said about that persistence piece. Overcoming obstacles, not listening to the noise and persistence. I took Ziploc bags. I went out into the fields in front of my grandfather's house and I scooped up dirt and I brought the dirt home to my father. And I said, here, this is from our village. This is from your father's house. And yeah, it was quite a touching moment.
Yeah, that's a great story. I think people should.
Maybe there's a screenplay.
Is it on Audible?
It's on Audible.
Oh, okay. I'll check that out because I have so many books. I meet you. You send me a copy of your book. People send me electronic copies. So I have Kindle, books, Audible. I mean, I can't even keep. Somebody's like, "Well, did you read my book?" I'm like, "Honestly, no. You're like 26 on the list." You know?
Yeah.
But I love that story. I'll definitely check. What's the name of the book?
It's called Lost and Found.
Right.
Seeking the Past. Finding Myself.
And you didn't use a pen name. You used your name.
Oh yeah, no, it's my name. So even if you go to Amazon and type
my
name in,
up, right?
Yeah, or to my website, you'll see the writing piece. But people, there is potential interest. There's a few people who may be interested in a screenplay because they said it's such a compelling story.
Yeah, and,
I think we'll have to see.
Nowadays, they want to tell everybody's story. So if you have a compelling story, you get Amazon, Netflix. What they're looking for good content.
Hey, but Mitch, if this
you need a representation, I could be your business advisor. I can't be your lawyer, but I can.
Well, there's that. But equally at the same time, Mitch, I said, I want a cameo in this production. I mean,
That should Mitch be well, that could be in the contract.
I know. So I'll be this person pouring tea. Mitch is in the background and you're the tourist and I'm going to serve you tea.
I'll do a walk on, whatever, walk by or whatever they call it. I'm all up for that.
Yeah.
But Sam, I appreciate you coming on, spending the time with me, sharing your thoughts and your ideas. Keep changing the world. Keep motivating people, especially the students of tomorrow. I think that, we got to teach them differently for the future than we did ourselves in the past. So I appreciate you taking the time and thanks for coming on the show.
No, Mitch, and thank you for the opportunity to share and having this wonderful conversation with you. It's been enjoyable, and I hope that your listeners maybe pull a nugget or two out of it that they're like, huh, this is something maybe I should try. And, I do appreciate the opportunity to share today.
You're welcome. And thank you, Sam.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.